It is Sunday, March 10th, 2013, and this is episode 10 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell. Just a reminder, the thoughts and opinions I express on this podcast are mine and do not represent those of my employer. Joining me tonight is a special guest, my son, Jason Bell. Go ahead and say hi, Jason.
Hey, guys.
If you have any comments or questions or feedback for me about the podcast, send me an email at info@defensivesecurity.org or hit me up on Twitter @DefensiveSec. So let's start off with the first story, which is a very interesting write-up by ESET about a project they did where they sunk-holed the Zortab.b botnet. It's actually a pretty interesting read. I don't think there's any new breaking information in here, but I found it really interesting to actually read the technical details about how this botnet actually worked on the inside. The other thing that struck me is that this particular botnet read a lot like the Mandiant APT1 report as far as the inner workings of the compromised CNC systems acting as proxies to a central head-end CNC server. So what this bot actually did was pretty clever. It is a scalable, pluggable, module-based piece of malware that actually has a couple of main functions, the first being spam, and they actually estimate that this botnet, which had about 25,000 hosts attached to it, was sending somewhere around 80 million spam emails per hour. And you know, they're kind of figuring that the entire network was sending somewhere around 2 billion spams per day. And that's quite a lot of spam. And the interesting thing was, when you look at the kinds of spam it was sending, these are readily recognizable spam that we all get. They're phishing emails from UPS and FedEx. They are those sorts of things.
That seems to be a lot of emails, and it's also quite convincing that there's so many and it's kind of familiar. So
you mean they come from a familiar source, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
The other thing I thought was pretty interesting about this particular bot is that it does it has a pay per download or pay per install component where they participate in a PPI affiliate program. So one of the modules included in the bot actually goes off and downloads some other piece of malware, either ZBot / Zeus or / Citadel, depending on who you're talking to. And as part of that install, the operator of the botnet actually gets credit and they earn money for every new installation of Zeus or ZBot that they get. But I think this is an interesting case where certainly this particular piece of malware is really targeted more at consumers and stealing your email login and password, or stealing your bank ID, or compromising your computer to send out more spam. But in general, it highlights the growing sophistication behind these malware botnets. And it's not hard to see how over time these things are going to really start to become very problematic inside the business setting as well. All right, the next story is about a new podcast called Security Conversations, run by a great guy named Ryan Narain. And Ryan, I don't really know how to pronounce your last name, so I apologize. Anyhow, Ryan interviewed the CEO of Vupin at CanSec West, and I thought the comments made by the CEO of Vupin were really worth listening to. So I'm going to play that snippet for you right now.
We came here to show that we are able to create exploits for any technology, for any browser. 2 years ago, we have written exploit for Apple Safari, which was a macOS 6. Last year, we did Chrome and IE9. This year, we will be doing IE10, Firefox, Flash, and Java. So we show that every browser, every plugin, every operating system can be hacked.
So just a reminder for those who might not be familiar, Vupin is a company out of Europe that actually specializes in researching and developing exploits and vulnerabilities in common software, and then sells those exploits to primarily governments. And you know, part of the discussion later in this interview has to do with some of the ethical questions about, you know, who they sell to. Do they sell to repressive regimes and that sort of thing? But you know, that's not what I'm interested in here in this commentary. My point is that Vupin is essentially saying all this software is vulnerable. It just takes time and effort for them to develop working exploits for this stuff. So again, the theme that I'm trying to impress on people here is that the internet is a dangerous place, and there's not a lot we can do to mitigate it, because so much of our problem space lies in the land of zero days that can't be mitigated by things like antivirus or intrusion prevention systems. And that really says to me that we're back to really relying on behavioral and fundamental control systems that will avoid exposing these things to points of exploitation, right? So how do we limit the surface area of computers as they're working on the internet? And that can be done in a number of ways. It can be done through, you know, web filtering. It can be done through application whitelisting and so on. So carrying on with the theme of Pwn to Own, that contest is now over, and I just want to review the track record of what happened there. So Firefox was owned, IE10 was owned, Chrome was owned, Flash was owned, Adobe PDF Reader was owned, and Java was owned 4 times. I've got to tell you, the people who work in the Java development area of Oracle have just got to be hating life right now. All right, so carrying on with my thought about minimizing surface area, I was at a conference last week in Las Vegas, and I got to talking with someone who had an absolutely brilliant idea, and I really wish I had thought of it, but it's not mine. And that is, in their web browser, in their web filtering infrastructure, they block unknown or unclassified sites. And when you think about it, it's actually a thing of brilliance, because most of the malicious sites delivering exploit code are newly registered, and the attackers do that on purpose, because newly registered sites haven't had a chance to be classified by the web filtering companies, and therefore they haven't had time to be picked up as malicious and be blocked. So what you can actually do with most of these web filtering engines is specify that you want to block uncategorized sites. Now, certainly it's conceivable that you'll catch legitimate sites that just haven't been categorized, but most likely that's not going to happen very often. And in my view, it's probably going to be far more beneficial than detrimental. Okay, my next topic is another new podcast other than Security Conversations. This one's called the Secure Ideas Professionally Evil Podcast. The link to that is in the show notes. It's really good. I definitely recommend you listening to that, in addition to the Security Conversations by Ryan Nareen. All right. The last story I want to talk about is a follow-up to the Evernote breach that happened a couple of weeks back. Last time I talked about this, I didn't know what kind of password hashes they were being used, but it's come out that they are using MD5 hashes, which are salted, so it's goodness, certainly better than some of the breaches we've seen recently. But I think it's important to point out, and hopefully everybody is very well aware of this, that MD5 really is not an appropriate technology to use for storing passwords. MD5 was meant to be fast. And because of that, it's extremely fast to reverse engineer or brute force crack password hashes. You know, the average moderately priced PC with some GPUs can crack in the order of billions of passwords per second. So, you know, when you have very large dictionaries and combine that with the fact that people pick horrible passwords, you know, we're in a situation where it's just not very secure. And we also have to be cognizant that, look, we have SQLi vulnerabilities in our web apps that are allowing our password tables to be dumped. So we really need to take additional steps, in my view at least. And so that says that we should definitely be looking at hashes that are appropriate for storing passwords. Now, there was an interesting discussion on Twitter between some people, and for the life of me, I don't remember who it was. I was driving around Las Vegas while I was reading it. And basically, the conversation went like this. MD5s are computationally inexpensive, and therefore, if you have a busy site, if you were to use something more computationally expensive, like a bcrypt, that might be an avenue of denial of service. So somebody could get in there and use the fact that you're using bcrypt as a way to slow your site to a crawl, because they know it takes a lot longer to generate the hashes. And, you know, I think that's pretty wrong-headed, because even on busy sites, you're not actually hashing passwords that often. The only time you're actually hashing it is upon login, upon account creation, and upon password change, right? So unless you have a web app that doesn't have any other kinds of denial of service protection, basically rate limiting the frequency of login attempts, you're really not going to have a problem. You know, certainly if you have a gigantic site where you've got thousands and thousands of people logging in simultaneously, I could see where that would cause a problem, but you're not going to be running that kind of environment on one piece of hardware anyway. It's going to be spread across many systems. And, you know, the other fact is, look, if this is what we say is the right thing to do based on the risk, you know, maybe we have to refigure how much hardware we need to run the size of site we have. So the other thing I'll say is, you know, we in the security industry are very critical of sites that don't use SSL and who moan about the computational overhead of using SSL and basically tell them to suck it up. This really isn't that different, and I'm kind of surprised to hear the level of angst that I did see. All right, so that is it for this week. It's a bit shorter show than normal. Not quite as many breaches this week. So I definitely appreciate everyone listening in, and I will say good night, and I'll also let Jason say good night.
Good night, guys. Have a good time.
Take care, and we'll talk to you again next week. Bye.